You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Today's date is Monday the 30th of May 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today I want to take a look at Britain's police force, particularly two news stories that we have here. And the first one concerns Neil Basu. And listeners will probably remember that Neil Basu is responsible for the anti-terrorism squad. He was the chief anti-terror officer that we had in Britain up until recently. I think he has been replaced since then. And he was the one that was responsible for saying that Britain's far right were the fastest growing terrorist threat. And of course, a couple of weeks ago, we heard from a review into Prevent, which is the organization that is supposed to identify people that are at risk of turning into terrorists and then preventing them from going on that path. And we heard from this review that in actual fact, the Prevent organization has been concentrating on the far right far too much at the expense of Islamic terror. And in the time that they've been concentrating on the far right, various Islamic terror plots have seen fruition. We've seen an MP that's been murdered since then. We've seen people that were stabbed, four or five white people that were stabbed by another Muslim terrorist that was under surveillance by Prevent. And yet we haven't heard of any far-right plots to kill anyone. We haven't heard of anybody in the far-right that's actually been killing anyone. And the Prevent review suggested that the people on councils, left-wing councillors, have been misusing Prevent to go after people with right-wing views and basically to try and silence them, to try and make them frightened to speak up with an alternative opinion to the one that is presented by the mainstream and also presented by the government. So Neil Basu was really not helping by saying that Britain's far right were the greatest terror threat, when in actual fact, Britain's far right, the terror threat from Britain's far right is dwarfed by the terror threat from Islamic extremism. Now, he's gone for a job, a new job with the government, and he's been turned down for this job, and now he's wondering why, and he suspects that race might be involved. And what this shows is that even in the highest echelons of society, if somebody non-white is turned down for a job, the suspicion is always going to be there that they were turned down for the job because of their race. Now, if they lived in a homogenous community that was all black, then there was no way that they could have a suspicion that they weren't given a job because of their race. And this is one of the problems with multiculturalism. There is always going to be that suspicion there that you didn't get something that you wanted because somebody was discriminating against you. The only way we can eliminate that discrimination is to eliminate multiculturalism. And there are some other reasons here as well why it looks like he may not have got the job, and we'll find out as we get into the article here. Britain's most senior non-white police officer has demanded an explanation from the government as to why he was overlooked for the top job at the National Crime Agency. And of course, anybody else that had gone for this job, they would think, well, I didn't get the job because I wasn't qualified, because I didn't make the grade. But of course, because he's non-white, that suspicion is there that he didn't get the job because of his race, because he's been told that white people discriminate against non-whites because of their race. The recruitment process for the Director General position at Britain's equivalent of the FBI has been mired in accusations of cronyism after it was reopened in a move that appeared designed to shoehorn the Prime Minister's ally, former Scotland Yard Commissioner Lord Hogan Howe, back into the race. And Lord Hogan Howe really isn't much better, but I think far more closer to the truth is that whoever it was that applied for the position, they just weren't good enough. They didn't make the grade. Neil Basu, 53, a serving assistant commissioner at the Metropolitan Police, said he was disappointed to have missed out on the £223,000 a year role. £250,000 a year he is being paid. And he came out telling us that the far right was the fastest growing terror threat. And that just wasn't true. That was a political pronouncement from him. I guess he was saying that in the hopes that by supporting political correctness, by promoting the mainstream narrative, that he would then get the job, hoping that it would be a political appointment. And then they would be able to say, look at the diversity we have here, that our head of the FBI is non-white. But he said some other things as well, which do go against what the government have said. The former head of counter-terror policing was understood to have reached the last two candidates before the Home Office said he had not been successful and reopened the application process. He told the Sunday Times, "I am disappointed and will not be applying again. I will be seeking an explanation from the Home Office." I mean, he's really got a chip on his shoulder about this. He thinks that that job should have been given to him. It is thought Mr. Basu had been penalised due to comments he had made about race and about Boris Johnson. He had previously suggested that the Prime Minister would be barred from joining the police force because of his use of the word pickaninnies to describe black people, and a comparison he made between Muslim women wearing niqab and letterboxes. So basically, Boris Johnson used a non-fashionable word, a fairly old word, to describe black people, and because of that he couldn't join the police. I mean, are they saying that it's incitement to hate to use an out of fashion word? I mean, we do have lots of words that we used to use to describe black people that were never considered offensive at the time, and it seems that whatever word we use to describe black people, within a few years it will be seen as being offensive. I mean, even the word BAMI, black and minority ethnic, the government are now saying we should not be using this term. And I'm sure that within a few years, they'll be claiming that just using the word BAMI is offensive and an incitement to hate. If we go on what's happened before with all these other words that we have. And as far as Boris Johnson saying that Muslim women wearing the niqab look like letterboxes, I mean, how is that incitement to hate? How is that against the law? That's just making a joke. He's just trying to make light of the situation. And I believe in the article when he said that, he was actually arguing for Britain's liberal policy as opposed to France's policy, which doesn't allow Muslim women to wear the niqab. He was talking about how liberal Britain is and how Britain would never ban Muslim women from wearing the veil, even if it makes them look like letterboxes, I think was what he said. So he was just making light of the situation. But now we come to the really important part. Neil Basu has called for British policing to accept that it is institutionally racist, and he argued for positive discrimination to boost the number of ethnic minority officers. Two things here. The government did a huge study into asking the question whether the British government, whether there was anything in Britain that was institutionally racist, and they came out with the answer that no, Britain is not institutionally racist. There are other reasons for why there are these disparities between life outcomes. And it's not down to the institutions themselves being set up to discriminate against black people. Yes, you do have individual people that might discriminate against non-whites, but the institutions themselves are not racist. And this is the government's position. They did a huge study into this. So Neil Basu is basically counter-signalling the government. He's arguing against the government's own report. He's saying that the government report is wrong, that British police are institutionally racist. And that's basically going against what the government have said. And he's supposed to be a representative of the government. I mean, he's probably saying this because he thought that was the politically correct thing to do. Perhaps he was unaware of this huge review and study that found that the UK was not institutionally racist. We did a programme on it last year. I think you'll find it in the Daily Nationalist archives. Looking at this report, I think we did two or three episodes talking about it. And the second part of what he says here, he's arguing for positive discrimination. And of course, he's basically arguing for people like himself to be given a job simply because of their race. I mean, that's what positive discrimination is. It's having a diversity quota. It's saying a certain number of blacks and non-whites have to be employed in this position. So if you have white people that have more qualifications, that are more qualified for the position, they need to be looked over if you don't have enough black people to fill it. So instead of having people in a position based upon their merit, you've got people in a position just because of their race. And Neil Basu apparently supports that. So I don't think that was the reason why he was looked over for this job. But I do think him saying that British police is institutionally racist, just after the government said the British police are not institutionally racist, I think that's the reason why he was not given the job. I don't think it has anything to do with the British government not liking the black colour of his skin. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. Mr. Basu, who would have become the first person of Asian heritage to lead a British law enforcement organisation, is understood to be consulting lawyers about his next step. Delays to the recruitment process also meant that Mr. Basu missed the deadline to apply for the vacant Met Commissioner role. So he's going to lawyers about this. I mean, he really thinks that he should have been given this job. And this is the problem. This is a problem that people run into when they employ non-whites. If they end up having to sack their employee because they haven't come up to the grade, then they always run the risk of being taken to a tribunal and being accused of sacking the person because of their race, because there is always going to be that suspicion there. It's always going to be that suspicion. If you're black and you're non-white, and you see somebody white that's given a job, or you end up losing your job, you're going to have that suspicion that it was racism behind it. And it doesn't matter how many laws and programs and policies we put into place, non-whites are always going to have that suspicion. And the only way to get rid of that suspicion is to have separate communities, just to have black communities with black police and black teachers, and white communities with white police and white teachers. There would be no discrimination, there would be no racism, and the world would just be such a far more pleasant place to live. You wouldn't have these suspicions, you wouldn't have these worries, and people would only be measuring themselves up against people from their own people group. And if you're measuring yourself up against a different ethnicity, then you're never going to be exactly the same as them, are you? I mean, if you're a white man and you're a runner and you're a sprinter and you're measuring yourself up against black sprinters, you're never going to beat them. You shouldn't be measuring yourself against them because they have faster twitch muscles and they can run faster. That's just all there is to it. That's something that a particular part of Africa has a lot of people that are built that way. And in the same way, you end up with white people that are particularly good at things like physics. You end up with white people that are particularly good at being in high flyers in business. And if you're black and you're measuring yourself up against them, then you're not going to come up to that standard. And the narrative that we have promoted is that instead of this being down to innate differences between the people groups, it must be because white people are discriminating against non-whites because they don't like the colour of their skin. And it's just such a ridiculous argument. And there is nowhere that you can go from that other than putting all the country's resources into trying to force a square peg into a round hole. The solution to all of this is to stop this crazy policy of multiculturalism and encourage people to identify with their ethnicity, to measure themselves up against their ethnicity, and to try to be the very best representative of their ethnicity that they can be. And that is the nationalist mentality. And we want to see society organised along those lines. If it's not possible for people to go back to their ancestral homelands. If they don't wish to go back to their ancestral homelands, then you could simply set aside parts of the country for those communities to live. I mean, London is already 60% non-white. You could say, well, let's have London as one of these non-white places, and let's have some of the parts of the country, the rural areas, we'll have them just for whites, and people that want to live just among whites can move to the rural areas, and people that want to live just among blacks and non-whites, they can move to London. I mean, obviously, you'd have to set aside some cities as well for white people. And you could have multicultural areas, and then you could measure it. You could measure the crime rate. You could measure people's happiness, people's trust within the community. I mean, we already know that it's far more beneficial to be living among your own people than it is to be living amongst all these different people groups. And then you wouldn't have this situation where somebody doesn't get a job and thinks that the reason for that must be down to race. Lord Hogan Howe, who oversaw the disastrous VIP child sex abuse inquiry, initially failed to progress to the final round of four NCA candidates, but refused to deny that he would apply again. So they're sort of implying that he's going to be given the job here. And what they're referring to here is allegations that lots of the aristocrats and the elites were involved in a child sex abuse ring. And it was all false. And these poor people, some of them died before it was actually found out that it was all false allegations that had been made up by a fantasist. But Lord Hogan Howe's police force took the fantasist seriously, and they arrested all the people that he named and questioned them. And of course, then they've got that stigma of being arrested for this. And as I say, so I think some of them died before it was found to all be false allegations. So Lord Hogan Howe really isn't much better than Neil Basu to be leading whatever this new FBI, UK FBI organisation is going to be. Lord Hogan Howe also issued a statement defending his record, which appeared to be both a job pitch and a dig at Mr. Basu. He said, "Under my leadership, the capital became a safer place. I also led a more diverse police service, with one in three recruits from minority backgrounds by 2017. So did it really become a safer place? I mean, there just seems to be more stabbings in London, more acid attacks than anywhere else that I can think of in Europe, particularly acid attacks. I guess we don't hear so much about them now, but a few years back, London was as bad as places in the third world for acid attacks. And if you actually look back at the figures for stabbings from 100 years ago, you'll see that there's pretty much the number of stabbings that took place in a year now take place within a day in London. A Home Office spokesman said a fair and open recruitment campaign is underway to make the best possible appointment to this vital role. Well, let's hope that somebody gets given the job on merit rather than on cronyism. Cronyism is just as bad as giving somebody a job because of a diversity quota, really, isn't it? But this does draw attention to the fact that it doesn't matter what level of society you are in. If somebody is non-white and they don't get given a job, they are going to have a suspicion that it was because of racism. And if we lived in homogenous societies, that suspicion would not be there. Continuing with the British police force here, a number of British police forces are allowing criminals to self-identify their gender for official records. And of course, this is why on official records now, it says that we have some women that are rapists, that actually rape people. And that is because, of course, they were biological males and they self-identified as female when they got arrested. Woke police forces across England and Wales are reportedly allowing criminals to choose what gender they are recorded as being on official documents, a report has claimed. Critics have slammed the revelation, saying that it corrupts data. If you allow criminals to note down their gender as being non-binary or unknown and unspecified, of course, it's going to make women out to be carrying out a lot more crimes than they actually do, because a lot of the people that are identifying as women are biological males that still have biological male drives. According to a report by the Telegraph, at least 9 forces across the 2 British nations allow criminals to be recorded as either non-binary or unknown and unspecified, with force spokesmen reportedly telling the newspaper that they recognise as many as 67 different genders. Of course, then you've also got this problem of what about giving a description of a suspect? How can you give a description of the suspect if you have it down on your details that the gender is unknown and unspecified? You can't even say whether the suspect is male or female. And also, if somebody is self-identifying, I mean, their view of what they look like, it could be very different to other people's view of what they look like. I mean, that's very obvious, isn't it, when you get these transsexuals that are trying to present themselves as females and they very obviously look male. If they were to be self-identifying what their gender is here with the police, then the police description is going to say female, isn't it? When in actual fact, anybody looking at them would say that, well, actually they are male. This is despite the fact that forces are reportedly highly reliant on such data for the purposes of spotting trends, as well as formulating future policy, with some commentators warning that such a method for recording could jeopardise this information gathering. Well, it is already jeopardising this information gathering. That's why we are now being told that we have all these rapist figures that are appearing in the female crime figures. And we also have rapes that are going on within female prisons now, where you have male prisoners, biologically male prisoners, identifying as female, going into a female prison and then raping the inmates there. I think we had one inmate getting pregnant by another woman in one of these prisons. If police stop someone going 90 mile an hour in a 50 mile an hour zone, but they only identify as going at 47 mile an hour, we would find that laughable, said Surrey Police and Crime Commissioner Lisa Townsend. So to not collect accurate data about someone's sex, not their gender, is ludicrous. And this is the point, isn't it? We have to define the difference there between sex and gender. And the police should be the ones that are identifying what sex somebody is. And they shouldn't be needing to be politically correct and writing down whatever it is the suspect says that they're gender is. This is why we have to have observable reality that we agree on, objective reality rather than subjective. Once we give up objective reality, then we don't have any solid points that we can refer to when we discuss things. We have to have agreed norms, particularly things such as male and female. Otherwise, we've got nothing solid to hang all our other ideas from. If you're trying to argue and debate, if you don't actually have agreed points that both the people in the debate agree upon, then you're not going to be able to have a debate. I mean, you often hear this in Dr. E. Michael Jones when he's debating with somebody, and the person he's debating with will say, "Oh well, I don't believe that happened." Well, what's the point in even having the debate then? If you don't believe in that these things happened or these people existed. And it's the same here, isn't it? If you're trying to talk about this, to talk about sex differences and gender differences, and the person you're talking to says, well, somebody that identifies as female, then they are female, then you're not going to be able to point out that there are these differences between them, because they're basically saying that females can have penises and males can get pregnant. And of course, we know that is not true. When you look throughout nature, it's basically people presenting as a different gender. I mean, cosmetically, they may look like a different gender, but just because something looks different doesn't mean that is actually what they are. And if you are the police and you have a witness that gives you a suspect description, and then the suspect appears, but the suspect's got a disguise on, it doesn't mean that suspect is not the suspect. It just means that the suspect has got a disguise on. I mean, it doesn't mean you can say, "Oh well, he was identifying as somebody else, so it wasn't actually the suspect." Getting back to the article here, we are in danger of going into a scenario where, rather than policing for the victim and the public, We are policing for the potential criminal. Surrey Police and Crime Commissioner Lisa Townsend continued, denouncing the ludicrous approach of some forces as corrupting valuable data. While the gender policies of the British police may seem extreme, they pale in comparison to those of the country's civil service. For example, while some British police forces may recognise up to 67 different genders, over 100 different genders are said to be recognised by Whitehall, with it also reportedly being acceptable for people to change their identification on a day-to-day basis, according to whistleblowers. So that's the people that are actually advising the government. They believe there are over 100 different genders. There is also a specific internal organisation for Mandarins who self-identify as transgender, transsexual, non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer, gender variant, cross-dresser, genderless, third gender or bigender, and intersex, which is called agender. This is what the government are up to. This is what the civil service are up to. This is what the people that advise the government on what our laws should be. They are setting up specific clubs for people that are confused about their gender. I mean, do we really want people that are confused about such an essential thing making our laws and advising our government? My colleagues and I were informed by HR that there are over 100 recognised gender identities in the civil service, as staff are permitted to self-identify their gender without any medical input and regardless of biological sex, one insider is reported as saying, regarding the internal state of the civil service, Britain's permanent bureaucracy. Another insider complained that they were spending 20% of their corporate work time on this crap, despite being hired to work on British trade policy. And it's not just the civil service that is being forced to spend 20% of their time on this. And this is going throughout the employment sector, isn't it? Everybody has to go on diversity training. Everybody has to be told about their white guilt and about their passive aggressiveness and their subconscious discrimination and how they should be working around these differences, such as people not turning up for work on time because maybe they have a different culture to white people where turning up on time isn't so important and things like this. And it sounds like a joke, but that is really what people are being told. I mean, we're being told that we should overlook the fact that people can't read and write anymore because it's discriminating against new arrivals who may not know yet how to speak English. So they should be taken on university courses anyway, even if they can't read and write. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous where this is going. This is what happens when you start with false premises. When you start with a false premise, the conclusion is going to be way off the mark. We really need to go back to setting definite things that we all agree on. And what that should really be is the difference between male and female. And we should be encouraging people to be happy as being either a male or a female, particularly with all the hormone disruptors that we have in the environment, not confusing people, not pandering to people that say that they're a woman one day and a man the next. I mean, that just shows that somebody is unbalanced and they're not very good at making decisions. We can't, I mean, they're the last people that you really want making important decisions for the country, such as the civil service. And now we have the police doing this for criminal suspects. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.